Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
doesn't
can...
Doesn't talk film! I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will give it all they got. Lights, camera, action!
This is a brand new episode of the best movie podcast on the internet, Real Nerds Podcast. I am Ryan. I am joined by Brad.
Hey, I'm here too.
And we were going to see The Strangers Chapter 1 for our film of the week, but you know how I love to fuck with people. So our film of the week is If. Stay tuned and we'll recommend the film or not, play the trailer, and then spoil the movie. We'll also talk about the big movie news of the week and things we've watched throughout the week. And also, if you want to see us in person, Brad, people can see us in person in a little over a month.
That's right. We have new jobs.
We'll be slinging pies at Denver Fan Expo.
Yeah.
And you look for our booth. Last year, we did Blockbuster Video. Because although you and I were born in the 80s, I feel like I identify with the 90s more. You know what I mean?
I feel like our brains, like we kind of had some autonomy by the time we were like 10 or 11. Before that, yeah, you're kind of at the mercy of your parents, like 100%. But around that time is when you started to break free and become your own person.
I want to break free. This year, our booth is a 90s aesthetic style Pizza Hut, which I always loved growing up. I went to the one in Golden, and they had, you know, the Pac-Man arcade game that was the table, the salad bar, the Book It Pizza Club, and, you know, just brings up warm, fuzzy feelings for me.
Yeah, for me as a Ninja Turtles fan, they had the Turtles Coming Out of Their Shell tour like tie-in. So
yeah,
that whole concert with the cassette and like the program with the mask you cut out of the back, all that gives me the warm and fuzzies for Pizza Hut from the 90s.
Yeah, and what's really, really cool, and I really want to thank everybody who stopped by our booth last year and gave us lots of props, is, you know, your hard work of the designing and the execution paid off. I mean, it was my idea, but you really ran with it. But it's cool, in all seriousness, it's cool to see people respond to it. You know what I mean? You know, because we were mentioned in Westward, and it was really cool that people responded that well to what we did.
That's my goal, is to be the number one attraction at Fan Expo this year.
Yeah. And I think we won't give away, you know, our secrets, but what you've shown me so far looks really cool. The menu just like brought back a flood of memories of the menu, not the actual fold out menu, but you know, it was in the center of the table with the pepper and the Parmesan cheese and I guess like a flag on the condiment thing, is the vibe I got from it.
Nice. That's what I was going for. I was trying to do like the plastic, like one sheet menu thing, but
yeah,
I have to buy like a 10 pack of them. Like that would be like $30 for 10 of them. So I was like, you know, we've already got their acrylic stand up for like when we say like, hey, come record our booth. I'm just gonna stick the menu in that thing.
Fuck yeah. And it'll look cool. We are working on the pizza scent, just so people know. We'll try to figure something out.
We're going to psychologically make you hungry for sure.
Yes, for sure.
But my favorite thing is I'm holding it right now and looking at it. It's the pizza box. Like, there's an actual Real Nerds pizza box.
I know. I need one of those, Brad.
You can have one because they gave us extras. But
sweet.
Yeah, if you come to our booth and you know, you can buy one of these special pizza boxes with some goodies inside.
Yeah, it'll be cool. It's like, obviously we can't have pizza in it because there's no way we can keep it warm. But
health department rules and things like that too. But yes, go on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, serving food. But it will be really cool. It'll be a cool, movie centric pizza box. So last year we did the Blockbuster video cassette, pizza or prize things. And this year it's going to be the pizza ones. So, and my cat almost just died. But yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. And I'm looking forward to it.
The difference is, though, with the pizza boxes, there's only 10 of them. So,
yeah. So you'll have to buy limited. Them.
Yeah. But the, I mean, this is, it's a super rare item and it'll be definitely be worth the $20. Everything aside will definitely be worth with a purchase. And you get the cool box, which is like a collector's item in itself. So, and it'll come with like one of our watch it pins. So that'll be a bonus. So,
yeah, I almost wonder if there's a way we can get, you know, how the 1 year we got our glassware in there. I wonder if there's a way we can get it in the program.
Oh, like a con exclusive?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if Fan Expo does that, except for like their own stuff anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see.
And then, I think... we haven't heard back yet, but we did apply for a panel, so you'll have to block out some time in your con weekend to come see us talk about how streaming sucks and how going out to movies is awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, we look forward to seeing you 4 days this year.
I know. It's a long time.
We got it. I know. I haven't seen my two favorite artists, who I do have commissions. They haven't been announced for the show yet. It makes me worried that neither Chad Harden or Georges will be there.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yep. That is what it is. This week on Real Nerds, we saw If. Brad, do you recommend the latest from John Krasinski?
Yeah, I think it's okay. I found it a little confusing of a movie, honestly. It's pretty imaginative, but I felt like there was just a lot of it that was, just seemed a little convoluted, like a little extra. Like it could have been simpler or more simplified. But yeah, it's a good fun family watch anyway.
I'm in the same boat. I think it looks really good. You know, I think it is a cute family film, and there is some emotional core to it as well. But I had a hard time sometimes, and I thought it was just me. I'm glad you said it. I didn't want to seem like I was stupid, but it seemed like I missed rules or something in it. But
yeah.
I don't think I did. You know what I mean? It's because they didn't really explain the if very well, and why she could see him. But anyways, I mean, I still think it's a cute movie, and I think it's a fine family film. Here's a trailer for If.
What if I told you imaginary friends are real? And when their kids grow up, they're forgotten.
Are any of them scary?
Worse. Desperate.
Question, why did these kids forget about us in the first place?
Last week, I just started falling apart.
They're sucking the oxygen out of the room.
Honestly, Doc, if this is how it's going to be, I'm just going to wheel myself back and plug in.
I can make your hands clap.
We've started the matchmaking agency to help IFs find new kids.
Or we just disappear.
Blue. Happy place, happy place.
Coffee and croissants. Coffee and croissants.
I can help you.
How?
Because I'm a kid.
You are the chosen one.
No. Let's not give her a complex.
Good luck, Short Stack.
It's all up to you.
No pressure.
Cock and dagger!
Hope this works.
On the roads of Tokyo,
All right, let's find these ifs some kids.
Keith! What kind of a kid creates an invisible if?
I can find anyone.
Anywhere!
He got my mouth.
Thanks for doing this.
Don't look him in the eye.
Which one?
Yeah, that's gonna grow right back.
Am I disappearing? Oh!
All right, I'm not ready for this.
I need to throw up, or I need a snack. It's one of the two.
Gross.
We have to help them.
Yes, we do.
I'm not gonna ask you again. Put some pants on. You're freaking everyone out.
Hi.
How'd it go? Oh my God.
Does this make us partners?
Let's not get ahead of ourselves, shall we?
Keith!
And Mom said too much candy isn't good for your tummy, but I said, oh my God.
Wow, my eyes can taste it.
I am so sorry.
You don't taste that in your eyeballs?
If revolves around a girl named B who has to spend time with her grandmother because she lost her mom to cancer and her father is having heart surgery and preparing for it. So she has to do that. And while she's there, she sees a little, I guess, is she a ballerina named Blossom, who is an if. And she also meets Blue, who is a big purple guy. And that's like a little funny thing. It says, well, my kid was colorblind. And like Steve Carell as Blue is really great. And so, yeah, that's the premise. And at first, they don't want to disappear these ifs. So they're trying to rematch them with new children, and it's not working. And Ryan Reynolds is kind of their, I don't know what you'd call it, their ringleader or gatekeeper, fixer guy, match guy. And so he's trying to find the right family for them, and it's not working. So he brings B into the mix, and she tries as well. And then she learns that maybe it's not the kids that need the imaginary friends. It's maybe the adults who have kind of lost their sense of wonder or what they wanted to be when they grow up, is what I got. I mean, does that sound right? Because it's a little confusing of was happening with that.
As I was watching, I was trying not to make, like, for a premise like this, you know, I don't think I like should have all the rules explained to me. Like, that's probably not the point of it. But yeah, there was kind of like a, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, so when new kids are born and they, you know, go through life, they invent new ifs, but then the ifs don't go away. They go to this other place. So there should be like billions of ifs, right?
Yeah.
But there don't seem to be that many. And like, where do they go? Like, if
yeah, the
not
only thing
there.
I can think of, just in my thing, is that it's kind of revolved around her world. So maybe it's just something that she invented to help her cope with what she's going through as a kid. Is the vibe I got at the end of it?
Yeah, I guess that's.
I was thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at the beginning, I was the same way. I said, "Wait a minute, how is there only, you know, 10 of them? Shouldn't there be so many that, you know, it wouldn't fit underneath the flying swings at Coney Island?"
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess like if explained as, you know, all these ifs are just tangentially related to her, then yeah, I guess that limits the environment. And why she can see them and not just the billions of other ones running around New York, you know?
Yeah.
But also, like, I thought it was an interesting choice to make her mother passed away, but also her dad's in the hospital with a heart thing. It just seems like an extra tragedy. Like, you could just, you know, you could just explain the movie as he's a dad in heart surgery or something. And also, I don't understand, like, why he was in there for so long, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a medical person. I'm sure there is an actual reason why, if you have heart surgery, maybe you have to be in the hospital for a little bit.
Like, my dad's had like four heart,
right?
Well, my dad's had 4 heart attacks, and he's usually like in and out in a day. So,
But maybe if it's like a heart disease that I don't know.
Usually you don't sit and like wait for the heart surgery for like a week and then do it. And then like he was in there preparing, you know, like up to an IV.
Yeah.
Walking, running around his room for like, I don't know why, like that shit costs tons of money.
Yeah. I don't know. But I mean, he's really good now. I didn't know John Krasinski even had a part in the film. Until, cause was he in any of the trailers?
No. Yeah. I was surprised. I didn't realize he was an actual character in it. Yeah. Cause I kind of thought like that would have been Ryan Reynolds' part, but
yeah,
from the trailer.
I was hoping that, cause I kind of pieced together that he was imaginary. Cause there's parts in the film where no one else acknowledges him. And it, I kept on hoping that he is the grown up version of Calvin from Calvin and Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh, maybe.
Cause like, they did have little, a Calvin and Hobbes book in there.
Maybe spiritually, like that's a, like maybe it was an inside joke for John Krasinski when he's writing it.
Yeah, well, I do know the guy who created Calvin and Hobbes would never allow them to be part of something.
Yeah,
that's why all the Calvin and Hobbes stuff that you see, none of it's official. It's all parodies.
Yeah.
But I thought it'd been cool if he would allow somebody that one thing in a kid's movie, you know, but. He stuck by his convictions. But yeah, no. And because too, even Ryan Reynolds' character, though, was kind of weird because I thought he was kind of mean. And I didn't understand why he was so mean.
Well, yeah, it's, and I kind of tracked halfway through that he was probably her if.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, before that, yeah, he just kind of has this chip on his shoulder. And I don't know why he would, because like, why, and why is he keeping a secret from her? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, but the little girl is great in it. I tried to place her. I said, oh yeah, she's in The Walking Dead, is where I know her from.
Like recent seasons? Because I haven't watched it for like six years.
She's Rick Grimes' daughter, Judith.
Oh, wow. She grew up that much in the show? Okay.
Yeah, there's a part where the show flash forwards 5 years. But yeah, no, it's but there's some parts too that tug at my heartstrings when, you know, she's in his hospital room and she's like, "I need you, Daddy." I'm like, "Oh man."
Yeah.
Manipulative motherfucker. But I mean, hey John, why is your wife Emily have like the smallest voice part in it? What the fuck is that about? John.
Emily, call me.
Yes.
I'll get you bigger parts.
Yeah.
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 I don't know what to say about it. Yeah. There's.
Yeah, it's a cute movie. I think the CGI characters look great. There's a part with the bear, Lewis, who's voiced by Lewis Gossett Jr. And he's sitting on the bench at the end, and you can see the wind blowing his fur, and it looked amazing.
Yeah.
So hats off to that.
I saw it at the drive-in, so I didn't get to like see the detail. You know, I was like hundreds of feet away from the screen. But
yeah,
yeah.
And Michael Giacchino, his Gorford, I thought was really good.
Yeah, he has a very repetitive note thing going on between the Batman and this. I think.
Like, I always like his stuff because I mean, I saw Spider-Man: Homecoming this week in the theaters. And, you know, well, I'll talk about what we've been watching, but he does that with his Spider-Man stuff, too. The theme for Spidey is always kind of in the back of every piece that's playing, but I think it helps land.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't bad. I was just like, huh, I just noticed a pattern going on. Because, yeah, I like the Batman score, but it does have, the joke is that it does have, like, this, like, quick, hummable three-note thing that gets recycled a lot. And then, yeah, if... kind of has this thing too that pops in constantly throughout the movie, but and then like a weird Tina Turner, a lot of Tina Turner references,
yeah.
Music wise, didn't see that coming. Not sure that's on kids' radar, but yeah.
Well, you know, John Krasinski had that great lip sync battle where he was Tina Turner.
Oh,
maybe it's a little. Maybe he must be a real big fan.
Must be.
Did you get the Rod Stewart in it?
Remind me, because I think I did, but I forgot it already.
The Faith is Ooh La La.
Oh, yep.
Because it actually happens, she flips the album, and I go, oh my God, there's the Faces. And then it's the closing song, which is fitting for the movie. The chorus is, I wish I knew what I know now when I was younger. So it works. It's not Rod Stewart singing it, but it's his band.
Speaking of the ending, that reminds me, like, it was, I thought it was weird that she forget Calvin for like a second for some reason and then has to be reminded of him?
I don't remember.
Never mind.
I literally just saw it like 2 years ago. I mean, 2 years.
Two minutes ago.
An hour and a half ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw it a couple days ago. I can't remember. I remember getting to the end and there's like a part where she goes back to the her grandma's place or whatever, and she goes up to that room and she has to like remember the guy she's been talking to the whole movie. It's like, what? How did she forget him already?
I don't remember that part.
She goes into like the apartment that she's been seeing all the ifs in, and suddenly it's just like a normal apartment with nobody there.
Oh no, I think she was thinking about where did everybody go.
Oh.
That's what I got from it.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought she was sitting there going like, I know it's like, everyone's supposed to be here, but I don't know why. Like, yeah, never mind. It kind of dovetails into something else I watched recently that's a little similar, so I'll talk about that later. But yeah, there's not like a lot of conflict or.
No.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, hey, let's find these ifs homes and yeah.
Yeah, and it's okay too. You know, family movies are fine every once in a while. I appreciate that there's no, you know, crazy violence or cussing in it. It's just a family movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice that it's not one of those like zany, you know, like Minion style, like just loud nonsense movies. It's like a quiet, almost like a throwback to like 80s family films like Neverending Story or something.
Yeah, if it was a little darker for sure. And, you know, my kid really wants to see the new Garfield movie, and I've already been reading reviews of it, and they say he's super hyper and crazy. I go, that's not Garfield at all. But, you know, so I have fear for that one.
Some executives, like, he's bummed about Mondays. He just lounges around like a sloth eating lasagna. How are we supposed to make that fun?
We need to have him be, like, wired and when I saw the trailer, because Kellen wants to see it really bad. Because he's been watching the Garfield and Friends cartoons. And I go, oh, man, I think he's going to be disappointed. Because, you know, in that one, he's, you know, Odie, leave me alone. I wonder how many pop songs they're going to have in it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then at the end, they're going to sing and dance. And that's the ending.
Pretty much.
Yep, we could do this.
I also wonder what executive was like, you know what? What's Garfield's family like? Does he have a dad?
Yeah, he does have a dad. I think we're on to something.
Yeah, cool. Get Chris Pratt and Sam Jackson to voice both of them. Start shooting next week.
Done.
Rendering or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Is Jim Davis dead? Is that why, like, he has no creative input?
You know, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I know Charles Schultz is.
Yeah. He died in 2000, I believe.
Yeah.
But no joke. I think he retired and he died a week later.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Don't quit your day job.
Yep. Hey, this is a big movie news of the week.
It's real news.
Criterion and Janus Films have been bought by Indian Paintbrush Studio, which you'll know, Brad, because they distribute all of Wes Anderson films.
I do know that.
And the statement they released is that they're still going to just keep trucking on with what they make, and it's just a way for them to kind of collaborate and maybe, you know, bring more movies into the Criterion fold and make the movie going experience that much better.
And hopefully get the most recent Wes Anderson films finally on Criterion.
Oh, I'm sure it's going to happen.
I wonder if like there's a cost associated to it before, but now that it's like under his banner, like he could just do it for free. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I guess I was thinking, because, you know, Guillermo del Toro, his new stuff comes out on Criterion, even though it's streaming. I wonder if he has some sort of deal with Netflix, you know, where he says, hey, I'll put it on Netflix, but it also has to be available physically on Criterion.
Probably. He's got that kind of clout.
Yeah. Because I noticed that about his movies. And I think the same with Scorsese. You know, no matter what I think about Scorsese, his new movies still show up on Criterion. So,
yeah, I feel like he's one of those directors that, like, the Criterion will just put everything out if they can. Because, like, yep. there's that Taxi Driver still coming out. And, like, it's not one of my favorite movies, but it is, like, a cinema classic. But, like, it's one that, you know, they've done Raging Bull and everything. They should do his Taxi Driver on Criterion. So I'm like, I wonder if I should just hold out a little longer instead of getting, like, this 4K Taxi Driver that's coming out.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, a lot of it, too, is the studios that they're produced by.
Yeah, I don't know what that one is.
Yeah, either do I. I'm guessing Warner Brothers, because, of course, Daisy's a big Warner Brothers guy.
You know, maybe now. I don't know, back then, if he was, like, tied to a studio or not.
True. I don't know. Yeah, that's about it for the movie news. I mean,
I guess Wes Anderson has a deal with Netflix, too, because he did the wonderful World of Henry Sugar short stuff, so.
Yeah. So it's, and I'm sure he has clout too, because his Criterion releases are really good. So, sweet. Hey, we watch things throughout the week. This segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Brad, what'd you watch this week?
Yeah, so, let's see. I saw a bunch of stuff. I actually saw the original movie we planned to watch this week, Strangers Chapter 1.
I saw that too.
So I'll save that for the end of my list so we can talk about it together. But other than that, I decided to finally watch some of the Planet of the Apes movies that I haven't seen.
Because
Kingdom was pretty awesome. I was like, okay, I'll give these a shot. So I watched Dawn and War. And Dawn's pretty good. War is pretty awesome.
I think they're great movies.
Yeah. Although at this point they both run together, so I don't really know which they're talking about, but but I'll skip ahead. So after that I decided to watch the original Planet of the Apes with Charlton Heston. And that was underwhelming.
Yeah, it's okay. I know Zach loves those movies.
But what's cool about like the modern ones is besides like all the, you know, fancy special effects and everything, is that I'm watching those movies and it definitely feels like they made a movie based on a story. And when I watched the original Planet of the Apes, it feels like here's a book that they adapted into a movie based on trying to like please a movie star.
Yeah.
It's like Charlton Heston's character in the movie is like way too suave for no reason, you know, and he's supposed to, like, they're all like NASA guys or ANSA or whatever. They don't act like scientists at all.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I've never been that enamored with it. I mean, it's a cool concept. And I mean, I think it's more well known for obviously the ending. When I watch it now, I haven't watched it probably in 10 years, but when I watch it, I just think of The Simpsons. I can't help it.
Yeah, like it's more prevalent as a pop culture icon than it is actually a sit and watch movie.
Agreed.
Yeah. And it's rated G and there's like dudes' dongs like flapping around when they're running to the water. I'm like, this is not Disney Plus, man. That's one of my funny favorite things right now is like Poor Things is on Disney Plus. But obviously I have the adult plan and no kids, so I'm sure it's blocked on yours.
Different. Kellen's Disney Plus is way different than mine. Yeah. I mean, I really don't care what he watches per se, but Kellen definitely his Disney Plus is a lot different than mine.
Yeah. But I just think it's funny is like one day there could be like a malfunction at Disney Plus corporate center and the accounts get crossed and suddenly you can watch Poor Things. Yeah. So, but yeah, yeah, again, like Planet of the Apes, I also I appreciate like the makeup effects at the time were actually really awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Stuff like that. But yeah, it's a literally a movie of like they wander around a desert and then they get captured and it's like, you're stuck in a cage and then you go to a courtroom and like plead your case and you're back in the cage and you escape again. And you're back in the courtroom. Yeah. Yeah. And then, let's see. Couple quick things. I watched some other streaming stuff, like My Favorite Martian from 1999, the movie with Christopher Lloyd and Jeff Daniels.
Oh.
Yeah, I saw it in the theater once and thought it sucked. I was like, I'll give it a chance. See what I think. It's like way inappropriate of a movie.
I don't remember anything about it.
Like there's a part where, Jeff Daniels is like a television producer. And he's trying to like, you know, make his way up the ladder at the network. And the like lead anchor woman is, Elizabeth Hurley, and he's got a crush on her.
Oh, he doesn't. I love Elizabeth Hurley.
Yeah. She's actually like really good in the movie, but, yeah, she's like the daughter of the station boss. And so he screws up his assignment, gets fired. And on the way home, like the Martian crashes and it's Christopher Lloyd and, he's all zany and has like his suit is like a sentient being called Zoot. So it also talks.
I don't remember anything about this movie.
Yeah. But like the shocking parts are like, later. His name's Mark, Uncle Martin. And he takes like these, gumballs to like put on the appearance of a human when he's, you know, got this weird Martian body, and it also allows him to double as other people. So at one point he impersonates Jeff Daniels and shows up nude, when his coworker arrives for some reason, played by Daryl Hannah. And so he like, forces himself on her and kisses her. And, he's being all awkward. Cause he's like, I hope you're not my sister. You know, he doesn't know like her relationship to him. But he's trying to like pretend to be Jeff Daniels naked. And then later on, they do the same thing to Elizabeth Hurley's character. But then Wallace Shawn is like a government guy, who finds her tied up in her dressing room. Cause you know, they're doubling her on TV. And Wallace Shawn's like, oh, wait, she might be the alien. I should inspect her. And like, she's all tied up and they like, he closes the door to the dressing room. You're like, ooh, creep.
Yikes.
Yeah. Again, Disney movie. Literally a Disney movie. And then there's one part where they're in the Martian's spaceship, which with a click of a button can like resize itself. And so it gets shrunk down to really small. Or no, they're in his car, but they use their device on his car. So his car gets small. And they go through like the sewer system and then up through a toilet. And then they get stuck in the toilet. And then there's like this huge fat dude comes into the bathroom and has to take a shit. And so like there's this long drawn out like 2001 music, as he's sitting down the toilet and they know what's going to happen. Really gross. And then they like press the button, enlarge it, and like blows up his house and knocks his naked ass out on the lawn. Yeah.
What you're telling me, I've seen the film. I don't remember anything from it.
Yeah.
When did it come out?
1999, like the Matrix year, Star Wars Episode One summer.
So it's definitely been 25 years since I've seen it.
Yeah, came and went pretty quietly. But yeah, I remember being like, I don't remember anything from this movie other than like I saw it and I was like dreadfully underwhelmed being a huge Christopher Lloyd fan. Like I never saw the show. So, yeah, but I was like, oh my God, this stuff has not aged well at all. even for 1999.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes you forgive movies. I do in the 80s, you know, sometimes, but sometimes it's impossible to forgive them.
Yeah. And like, I mean, this stuff's not that bad, but still like it's
a perfect, tied up and you shut the door to inspect her body.
Yeah. Like that insinuation, like, yeah, that just like, ugh, not great.
No.
What else? I watched DuckTales the movie, Treasure of the Lost Lamp.
Hell yeah.
Which I think I saw as a kid, but yeah, definitely haven't seen it since then. And that's actually like a really good movie.
It is. Webby Girl. No, I love DuckTales. I have the complete set on DVD that comes with that movie.
Yeah, I mean, the show was great, but yeah, the movie is just like, I love the fact that, you know, the, like the, I guess the henchman to with the magician who's also voiced by Christopher Lloyd. He like becomes the guy who gets the lamp and does all the wishes for most mm-hmm. of the movie. Like that was a fun twist. And then, it's really sweet at the end when, you know, he doesn't just give the genie his freedom, but he like makes him a real boy like Pinocchio.
Yeah.
Like Scrooge gets his little like, you know, gold castle or whatever. But yeah, he also like uses his last wish to just turn him into another one of the, like the Huey, Dewey, and Louie ducks. So I was like, oh,
It's definitely a better movie than some of the other stuff around that time.
Yeah.
And I think it's on the strength of the show because the show is still really good. Even, I keep on hoping that would come out on Blu-ray because I got Rescue Rangers, the complete series on Blu-ray that came out a couple years ago. I'm surprised they didn't put DuckTales or Darkwing Duck out either.
I know. DuckTales was a big thing. And, like, this, you know, one I watched was in pristine HD. So, it's ready to go. But yeah, you look at it and you think, like, oh, this is like another shitty straight to video,
mm-hmm.
Thing. But I remember it played in theaters.
Oh, for sure.
And, yeah, it's actually like a pretty solid, like, it could be like one of those, like, prestige, Disney films. From that era. And then, yeah, I also watched Ewoks The Battle for Endor.
right.
Yeah. Tough to watch because, like, the production value and the characters and everything, other than the Ewoks, screams very much like Star Crash or like any Star Wars knockoff from that mm-hmm. era. But watching it, like, took me back to, like, that. The feeling of that era of Star Wars. So like that on that level alone, I was like, oh, this is nice. But
yeah,
if it didn't have Star Wars on it, it would be like, oh, this is like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 movie. Yeah. Like the principal from Breakfast Club is like the dad, in it. And then, yeah, there's just like wizards and things that, like, I guess Star Wars has wizards, but because they're Jedi, but this is like literally a wizard type stuff. like it has more in common with, like Conan the Barbarian fantasy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Conan the Destroyer almost production design wise. Yeah. With Star Wars in it. Yeah. And the last thing I saw is out in theaters. It's called I Saw the TV Glow.
Huh. That one looks interesting.
It's interesting. I could not really follow the story that much. It's very imaginative and nonlinear and artistic. And I think it's about these two loners in school who bond over this TV show called the Pink Opaque. And, you know, the one girl is very into it and uses it as an escape from reality, whereas Justice Smith's character is into it, but he's using it just to be friends with her and also kind of escape his family. But also, like, when push comes to shove, he's not dedicated to it as she is. So eventually it gets canceled and she disappears and she invites him to, like, you know, run away with her. But he's like, I want to stay with my family. Like, I don't want to just disappear. And so the rest of the movie kind of like takes place like 10 years later and then 20 years later of solving this mystery of where she went. And I really just think it's like this kind of like artistic exploration of, like being an artist and what that identity is, because around, like, eventually he's an old man and there's like a reflection of like, maybe I took the wrong path. Like, maybe I should have gone to the Pink Opaque with her, because all I've done with my life is, like, you know, watch my parents die and then take their house and like get a job and start my own family. And I still work. He's like 60 years old. And he's still working at like this fun arcade. Yeah. And she comes back at one point and explains like she's actually been in the show. But you're still not sure if it's like she's telling the truth or not. Yeah. And it's like super moody and artistic and imaginative and creative and all that stuff. And I just, yeah.
I couldn't tell if it's supposed to be a horror movie or a drama.
I'd say it's more of a drama, but it does have some like horror elements. You know, there's like some mysterious, like supernatural stuff going on with like the Pink Opaque show and just the mood of it. Like there's like these big bat or baddies, like monsters of the week in it that are kind of like, sometimes scary, sometimes just weird. Yeah, but I think it's like really well put. The soundtrack's awesome. Like the visuals are interesting. But just like the storytelling part of it is like trying to follow it. I was just like, what are we trying to do with this movie? And then it just kind of ends abruptly and you're like, what was I supposed to get out of this? I don't know. I just watched
something
weird.
Sounds like a A24 movie to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And just double checking. I talked about Pool Man with Zach. Yeah, so then I watched Strangers Chapter 1 with like you did.
Yeah, I don't think you liked it very much.
Nope. you weren't blown away by it either, though.
No, I wasn't blown away because, you know, one of the things I liked about the originals, The Strangers, is there was this uneasiness throughout it. I don't know. I liked that in the original, the couple was, you know, breaking up. So there's this already this tension to it. This one, they're kind of happy being together. And the dude was kind of a douche who happened to be named Ryan. I'm like, what the fuck? I still liked how it was shot. I thought it looked cool. But it had a lot of the same beats of the first one. And then they just threw in kind of a Texas Chainsaw wrong turn thing where it's some sort of, you know, hick town where everybody's weird in it. And I didn't get the vibe that would be a town in Oregon. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I did appreciate like there's some like really strong moments of tension, but then like everything else is kind of like every dumb thing I've ever seen in these movies before. Like the couple is completely clueless and unable to help themselves. And when they finally do, they completely botch it up. Yeah, they're kind of unlikable.
Yeah.
A lot of what they're doing is just like, it just feels like someone wrote on a page, like, well, they got to do something. So here's a conversation.
So let me ask you a question, Brad. I wouldn't do this to my wife. If I was in some strange area, I would not leave her home by herself.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I'm not saying that, you know, my wife can't take care of herself, but she has no means to get out. She doesn't know where she's at. I won't just be like, well, I'm going to go get some food, you know, in the town. Fuck you.
Yeah. Why can't they? Like, why wouldn't they go together? That was one of my thoughts, too. You know, you're in this creepy town. Everyone's acting weird and hostile. Like, why would you? You're in the stranger's house. Like, why would you stay there at all?
Yep.
And then they had so many chances to save themselves.
I wanted more people to die.
And you wait the whole movie for like stuff like that to happen. And it's just like stab, stab, fall over, movie's over. Congratulations. Yeah. I was like, I just sat through all that for that. Oh, because there's going to be two sequels. Fuck you.
Yeah. I want to see some carnage.
Like you could do carnage on like the couple's unlikable. And then the three killers are unlikable, like just as killers. You know, God, that whole part where he's got the shotgun to the back of her head and he's just like, I'll do it. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. I mean, I would have blown her away because she's already tried to kill me. Fuck you, bitch. Like, I'm not going to sit there and negotiate with you.
Yeah. There's so many times where they sat there and like tried to like get answers from them. Like, no, just kill all three. Yeah. Like, they've clearly shown you that.
Like, all they want to do is hurt you.
There's no mystery here. And because of, I guess that maybe he was a little hesitant because they killed that innocent guy, but.
Oh, yeah, I guess. But definitely, that's not a person who's innocent.
The homeowner? The locksmith guy?
The lady in the mask. And two, honestly, if I found a shotgun like that, I would just walk out the front door. Like, okay, try to come and get me. I will shoot you.
Yeah. Like, I thought that was a cool moment, like, in the movie. I'm like, oh, this movie's finally going to turn and get good when you're, like, she's got the axe or the backhoe or whatever. And, you think he's upstairs and she's going to get slaughtered. And he comes down and he's found the gun. I thought that was like, oh, cool. They're finally going to turn the tables on these guys. And not only do they leave the axe behind for no reason, but, he says, I have a ton of ammo. And then he's in the car. He's like, oh, I've only got 2 shells left. And, like, and then when they smash the Jeep, the Jeeps get smashed into the tree, and then he doesn't just take the truck that's abandoned and running with the keys in it. He just runs up the hill to shoot someone else.
And the dude in the mask was pretty fast. I mean, he dodged that shotgun blast.
Yeah. Ugh.
But yeah. I still had fun with it. I just had a couple nitpicky things. One, I wanted it to be more violent, but
yeah. And then also, like, that part where she's before he comes home with the food and she sees the one girl in the mask for the first time and then runs to hide in the closet, and they set up this fake out of like someone's walking to the closet door and it's actually him. It's like, who comes home with the food and doesn't know what's happening and then just like silently walks around very slowly upstairs to the closet to surprise her? Yeah. Like,
how did he know she was in there?
Yeah. Like, did he open the door and be like, I don't immediately see her, so I guess I got to explore the house instead of just saying like, hey, babe, I'm here.
Wait a minute. Maybe he's one of the strangers and we just don't know it yet.
Well,
there's 2 masked men.
He offed himself then, I guess.
No, it's part of a ruse, bro.
Oh, he's not really dead? She's in the hospital by herself and he's alive? Maybe. Yeah. And then she's laying in that body pit of like other victims, and then the girl in the mask hasn't like left for more than like 30 seconds and she starts calling. Like, like, maybe wait like half an hour or something to do that. Make that noise. Ugh. So dumb.
She's really pretty, though.
Yeah. Well, pretty ain't smart. Yeah, I just want to see more horror movies where the characters are actually smart and not intentionally dumb so that the writers can put them in situations that...
Well, the biggest mistake they did is they didn't have an old lady explain to them.
Oh, yeah, that's what's missing.
The strangers in town.
Yeah. Like, and how many times did that, I'm guessing it was one of the masked people knock on their door and then just like run to the end of the street and creep them out. Like, after the second one, I'd be like, come on, babe, we're going to walk. Yeah. We're going to walk out here. This is stupid. We should not trust any of these people.
Agreed.
Sorry. What else did you watch?
That's fine. I watched The Mask of Fu Manchu, which is a horror film from 1932. It is definitely a B movie, but there's some like charm to it. Like, I can't describe it. Boris Karloff plays Fu Manchu, and he's this evil doctor that wants this mask that will give him powers and
like the mask.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, the title doesn't make any sense because it's called The Mask of Fu Manchu, and he's looking for this mask of Genghis Khan because he's Fu Manchu. But, you know, whatever. And it's, you know, it, of course, there's this racist undertone to it because Boris Karloff is playing an Asian man. But I will say, he doesn't do the stereotypical Asian voice, which is nice. He just sounds like Boris Karloff. But there is this undertone of torturing and sexuality that they did before they really cracked down on the Hays Code. So it's a fun movie to watch. Warner Archive did a great job on the restoration of it. I'm always blown away when a movie that's, you know, 90 years old and it looks pristine. And they actually found the original uncensored version, and the inserts they put in are from 16 millimeter. So you can tell the stuff that ended up being cut, because obviously the quality isn't quite as good. But it's cool that it's represented that way, and it has a couple really cool vintage cartoons on it. So yeah, if you're looking for kind of a silly 1930s horror film, it's a fun one. So I went and saw Spider-Man Homecoming for part of Spider Mondays. And what they didn't say when I got the ticket is it was a extended cut that I have never seen before. There was more lines. There was a part with the Vulture that was longer. I mean, it wasn't anything that affected the story, but scenes definitely were trimmed. So it was kind of cool seeing it. And it's nice to see kind of a stripped down version of Spider-Man again. Just like when we saw the original Spider-Man in theaters. You know, it's cool to kind of go back to that, where he's only fighting the Vulture and he's still trying to figure out how to be a superhero. And Michael Keaton is so great in that movie. How he figures out Peter Parker and Spider-Man are one and the same is one of my most favorite scenes in any Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, that was like a great casting choice to.
Yeah, because you know what's great about him in that is you sympathize with him, and he's not unlikable. You know, you get why he's doing it, and then at the end he's kind of undone by his own greed. But he has that chance at the end too, where the Matt Gargan, who's going to be the Scorpion eventually, you know, he wants to know who Spider-Man is, and he won't give him up because not only did he save his daughter's life, he saved his life. So he's not 100% a bad guy.
Yeah. I think their reinvention of the Vulture is like one of the smartest things that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done.
Oh, I agree.
Because the franchise. Because, yeah, like, I don't know him as well as you do, but like, it just seems like, hey, it's this old guy in a Vulture costume terrorizing Spider-Man. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's 100% what it is.
But yeah, tying him into like, you know, this disgruntled city employee affected by the New York battle, you know, and then turning the tables and being like this.
He gets, you know, like, his name because he's, you know, scrapping and stuff. And
yeah, he's like feeding on the scraps of like,
it's
all the, I guess, I don't know what to call it, like the fallout of all of the stuff that the like the A-list heroes are up to.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it helps that, you know, an actor of Michael Keaton's caliber is playing him, because, like I said, that scene where, because there's this turn and it's really cool in the way the director, John Watts, does it. Is they're at that stoplight, and when he figures it out, it turns green, and it casts green over it, like the Vulture, and he says that line, "Good old Spider-Man," and I love the you get in my way again, I'll kill you and your family. I'm like, oh man, I fucking love that part.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
There's also that part too where, you know, early on, I'm just this guy who's taking advantage of, you know, I'm just helping my family, and I've built this business. I'm, you know, I'm a little bad, but I'm not, you know, a psycho or anything, but then like when his when the one guy in his crew starts to like screw up, and he just like, I forget what the device is, but he, like, basically disintegrates him. He's just like, well, that sucks.
Well, he says, I thought that was an anti-gravity one. He's like, no, it's over there. He says, okay, you're the shocker now.
He's just like, moving on.
But yeah, no, it is really fun to see. And I love seeing those movies on the big screen again, because how immersive it gets, because you forget how loud the scenes are and how much more you can hear when you're in a theater setting, you know?
That reminds me, I also saw Batman 89 again at the Alamo, and I too was hearing, like, there's this, that part where early on where you think it's Bruce and his parents walking through the alley, but it's like, you know, in the future it's a different couple. But there, you can hear some of the junkies like in the background just mumbling stuff, like almost like the ADR guy was just having a fun time just saying random shit. Over there.
You know, I always think back to when we saw Friday the 13th, the final chapter, in the theater, and you could hear Jason's grunts more, and it was just cool. The last thing I watched two things. I watched Aliens again because my kid, for some reason, is on. He likes the Aliens. That movie's fun. My random movie that I have that I haven't watched yet, it was The Three Amigos, and I forgot how stupid the movie is, in a good way, not like in a bad way. It's really like zany, you know. I don't know how else to describe it. The premise is silly, and Steve Martin is stupid in it but funny. There's this line that I love where the woman who sends for him, she says, I'm falling for the not smart one, and her son says, which one is that? They're all stupid. That's just a fun movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time. I didn't know it was on Blu-ray. Who put that out?
I don't know. It's I got an old one. I want to say it was Sony, because it's an Orion picture.
But it's like a bare bones, just, hey, the movie's on Blu-ray, here you go.
No, there is a special feature on it. It's only about 10 minutes long and deleted scenes. And it came with a booklet that was an article from Empire Magazine. So yeah, it's not totally bare bones.
I found it on VHS, last year, and I'll give it a watch again someday.
It's a fun movie. Next week is a film I'm really looking forward to, is Furiosa.
Will
be a film of the week.
Oh shit, yes.
So that'll be fun.
Something I've been like super looking forward to.
Right, I know. And I heard it's really good, so looking forward to that.
Yeah, the Esquire is actually getting it, so can't wait to watch it there. Yeah. I know, of all the movies they're filling up their slate with. And I'm just going to say it because, like, I'm really close to finalizing it. But Jean-Claude Van Damme's Damn Van is going to screen at the Esquire on June 12th.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And I'm trying to get UHF to screen with it. But
nice. What time are you going to do that? On June 12th, I got nominated for Officer of the Year again, so I have to go to a cocktail thing.
What time?
But it's 4 to 7:30.
I was thinking 7 o'clock.
Okay.
You can dip early.
maybe if they do the awards first, then I can totally leave.
Okay.
Because the only thing is, if I win it, I'll have to be there.
I mean, by 7:30, like if UHF ends up screening with it, you know, it's like Van Damme's like 35 minutes long, so it'll be like there'll be like a 30-minute buffer. If you've seen Van Damme, so whatever. If not, I might just grab a bunch of other filmmakers and screen their films. But yeah, I'm trying to get that to work. But yeah, it's just I was thinking 7 o'clock. And the thing is, like, we're gonna film a short video, a short film before and after it. So hopefully that works out. But yeah.
Very cool.
We'll see how that goes.
Sweet, yeah, keep us posted.
Yeah. It's gonna be it's supposed to be a Real News Presents JCVD plus UHF screening as a goodbye to the Esquire, but yeah, it's
awesome.
A long process to do.
Awesome. Well, until next week, we'll see you at the movies.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it!